Chapter 59. Mark lunged after her but lost his balance, slipping and falling. Bodies were on top of him in an instant, clawing and ripping at his clothes. He twisted and swung his elbows, felt both of them connect with bodies, heard screams. Hands were grabbing for his weapon, too many to fight off. He kicked out with his legs, squirmed onto his stomach so he could push himself up. Something hard hit him in the back of the head, and he collapsed, his face smacking against the hard tile. Then there was a thin, painful tug on his neck. He realized with horror that it was the strap of his weapon. He was just trying to reach for it when it slipped past his chin and over his head. There were hoots and hollers and cheers. His transvice was gone. All the focus in the room shifted to the stolen weapon, leaving Mark a few seconds to scramble back to his feet. The man who'd taken the thing from him was holding it up in the air with both hands and dancing in a slow circle. Those around him leaped up and down, their arms outstretched so they could touch the shiny surface. They were slowly moving away from Mark, and more people were pushing in to see the new prize. The mass was heading toward the other end of the hallway, into what looked like the kitchen. Mark knew he'd never get the transvice back. He frantically scanned the room for signs of his friends. Dee Dee was being handled by 3 or 4 people. She was kicking and screaming as they tried to carry her up the stairs. Trina was right behind them, fighting to reach the girl. Alec was battling at least 6 attackers who seemed bent on getting their own shiny prize. Even as Mark glanced at him, his friend smashed the transvice's end into one guy's face, shot a bolt of white light into another, vaporizing him. But then there was a mad rush against the old man, and he fell to the floor, people leaping on top of him. Mark had no choice but to go after Trina and Dee Dee first. He ran forward, pushing past people who didn't quite seem to know what they were supposed to be doing, and leaped onto the ledge, running up the outside of the stairs. He knew his only chance was to climb along it. He held onto the railing and inched upward. A man swung a fist at him and missed. A woman threw her body at him, oblivious to the possibility of hurting herself. Mark was able to duck and she sailed past, crashing to the floor below. Others tried to push him. Some from below swatted at him, grabbed his legs, trying to pull him into the seething mass of bodies. He fought them all off, somehow keeping at least one hand on the wooden railing as he dodged and slapped and kicked away their attempts to stop his progress. Finally, he made it past the leading charge, past the man and woman who had Dee Dee in their arms. Mark grabbed the railing with both hands and heaved himself over, landing cleanly on a step almost at the very top of the staircase. The people didn't stop, kept heading straight toward him. Mark didn't know what else to do, so he dove forward, wrapping his arms around Dee Dee and squeezing tightly, letting the momentum of his body pull her free from her captor's grasps. They rolled down the stairs, knocking people left and right until they bounced off the bottom step and onto the floor. He looked up from where he lay wrapped protectively around the little girl and saw Trina barreling her way toward him, pushing others aside, her eyes afire and focused on Dee Dee. Groaning from the pain that racked his body, he somehow got his feet under him and stood up just as Trina reached them. She grabbed Dee Dee from his arms, wrapped her arms around her tight. The little girl was sobbing. Their brief reprieve was over, however. People were coming at them from all directions. Mark took a quick look around and realized their prospects were grim. The house was in chaos. Alec was in the dining room, still fighting off a dozen attackers, firing his weapon when he could. Several of the mob gave up on him when they saw Mark, charging him instead. A surge of people also came from the other direction, from the hallway leading to the kitchen, and they came fast, as if they were fleeing something instead of attacking. More infected stood between Mark and the door, blocking any escape, and each one of them looked ready to kill or be killed. Mark held his arms up to protect Trina and Dee Dee, backed up and pressed them against the wall by the stairs. The first person to reach him was a mangled old man with scratches and gashes covering his head instead of hair. He leaped into the air, coming straight for Mark, when there was a thumping sound from the kitchen. The man's body turned into a gray wall, and then he was gone in a cloud of mist that washed over Mark. Mark's entire body went cold. The sound hadn't come from Alec's direction. Somebody had figured out how to use the transvice. The thought had barely formed in his mind before a bolt of white light shot past him and slammed into the chest of a woman standing in the group by the door. "Alec!" Mark yelled. "Someone shooting the other transvice!" The fear that prickled Mark's skin was like nothing he'd ever felt, even after all the hellacious things they'd experienced since that day when all went dark in the subtrans. A mad person was running around with a weapon that could vaporize a human in an instant. At any second, Mark's life might vanish before he even realized what had happened. They had to get out of there. Even with their diseased minds, the others in the house knew something extraordinary was happening. Panic rippled through the group, and every last person turned and ran for the front door. Screams and hysterical cries for help filled the air. The hallway was a surging river of arms and legs and terrified faces, all pressed together, straining toward the front of the house. More shots rang out from the rogue transvice. More people disappeared. Mark felt his sanity crumbling. He spun around and lifted Dee Dee into his arms, then grabbed Trina's shoulder and heaved her off the wall, pushed her away from the crowd and into the dining room where Alec had been fighting. He was surrounded by a mass of people, too many to shoot. Mark pushed Trina, this time toward the big bay windows, the few in the house that were still intact. He picked up a lamp and tossed it at the glass, shattering it into a million shards. Clasping Dee Dee tightly in his right arm, he ran forward, catching up with Trina and gripping her elbow with his left hand. Without slowing, he sprinted straight for the opening. Then he let go of Trina and dove, turning his body at the last second so that his back went first. He hugged the girl tightly to his body, trying his best to protect her as he thumped against the hard-packed dirt of what had once been a flower bed. The fall knocked the wind out of him. Gasping for air, he looked up into the bright sky, and he saw Alec's head poke out of the house.
"You really have lost your mind," the man said,
but he was already helping Trina climb out the window before he'd finished the short sentence. He jumped down after Trina landed safely. Then they were both helping Mark to his feet, and Trina took Dee Dee back into her arms. Some of the infected had seen their escape and were following. Others were streaming out the front door. Screams and shouts filled the air. People were already fighting each other outside.
"I've had enough of this party," Alec grumbled.
Mark was finally catching his breath, and the four of them started running across the dusty yard, angling toward the street that would lead them back to the burg. Alec tried to take Dee Dee from Trina, but she refused, kept moving, her face showing the strain of carrying the burden. As for the little girl, her cries had been replaced at some point by silence. There weren't even any tears on her face. Mark looked behind him. A man stood on the front porch, blasting away randomly with the transvice, sending people to their wispy deaths. He finally noticed the group running away down the street and fired off a couple of shots. They came nowhere close, the white bolts smashing into the pavement, sending up poofs of dust. The guy gave up, returned to killing closer quarry. Mark and his friends kept running. When they passed the house full of small children, Mark thought of Trina and Dee Dee and the future. He didn't stop. Chapter 60. Finally, they saw the burg once again. It rose up in the distance, more beautiful than Mark would have ever guessed one of the beat-up old things could look. Though each one of them was heaving like every breath might be their last, they didn't slow down. And soon the big hunk of scarred metal loomed above their heads. Mark didn't know how in the world Trina had done it with Dee Dee in her arms the entire time, but she'd refused to let anyone else help.
"You okay?"
he asked her between deep breaths. She collapsed to the ground, spilling the girl next to her as gently as she could. Trina looked up at him, still no recognition in her eyes.
I'm fine. Thank you for rescuing us.
Mark knelt next to her, the pain creeping back into his heart now that the craziness of escaping was over.
Trina, do you really not remember me? You seem familiar, but there's too much in my head. We just need to get the girl. She's immune, I know it. We need to get her to people who matter before we're all too insane to try.
Mark felt something turn in his stomach and leaned back, away from his best friend. The chilling way she'd said those last few words. He knew that there was something seriously wrong with her. And couldn't he say the same thing about himself? How long did he have until nothing mattered anymore? A day? Maybe two? The huge door of the Berg lurched into motion with a thump and a squeal, giving Mark an excuse not to respond. He watched as it lowered to the ground. Alex spoke loudly over the grinding gears and hydraulics.
Let's get them on board. Get everyone fed. Then we need to figure out what to do with ourselves. We might be like those kooks we just ran away from soon.
Not the girl,
Mark said, so quietly he wondered if his friend even heard him.
What do you mean?
The man replied.
The scar on her arm. She was hit by a dart months ago. Think about it. Trina's right. She's immune somehow. That's gotta mean something.
Trina had perked up at the statement, was nodding vigorously. Too vigorously. Mark's heart sank a little bit more. She just wasn't quite there. Alec let out one of his infamous grunts.
Well, unless you want to swap bodies with her, I reckon it won't do you a bit of good now, will it?
But maybe it could help others, if they don't already have a treatment.
Alec gave him a doubtful look.
Let's just get on board before some of them crazies catch up to us.
And blast us with my transvice, Mark thought grimly. He appreciated Alex not giving him a hard time about it. Alec headed for the ramp, which was almost all the way down, leaving Mark to deal with the two girls. Mark reached for Trina's hand.
Come on, it'll be nice and safe on board. And there's food, somewhere to rest. Don't worry. You can trust me.
It hurt to even have to say such a thing. Dee Dee stood up, her face still set in stone, and took Mark's hand before Trina could. The little girl looked at him, and even though her features didn't change, something in her eyes almost made him think she had a smile hidden inside somewhere. Trina got to her feet.
I just hope the boogeyman doesn't live on that thing,
she said, in a distant, haunted voice. Then she started walking toward the ramp. Mark sighed and followed, Dee Dee in tow. The next few hours passed quietly as the sun sped toward the horizon and darkness fell on the land outside the Berg. Alec flew the ship to the neighborhood where they'd parked before. It still seemed deserted. Then they ate and prepared bunks for Trina and Dee Dee to get some sleep. Trina mumbled a lot, and Mark even caught her with a line of drool on her chin at one point. As he wiped it off, sadness once again welled up in his heart. As for him, sleeping seemed utterly impossible. He planned to talk to Alec, figure out exactly what their next move should be, but when he found him, the old bear was snoring in the pilot's chair, sitting straight up with his head lolling to one side. Mark was half tempted to throw a chunk of food in his mouth and giggled at the thought of it. Giggled.
I really am starting to slip, he thought.
And his mood sank into a low and dark place. He desperately needed to do something to take his mind off things. He suddenly remembered the work pads he'd seen in the cargo room, the ones he'd secured against the shelf with the straps. His spirits rose a bit at the hope that maybe something within those devices would shed some light on what they should do. Maybe, just maybe, there was a way to get rid of the virus somehow. Maybe there was a chance. He banged his knee twice, and his head once, running through the dimly lit burg toward the cargo room. He remembered halfway there that he'd need a flashlight, and went back to get it out of his backpack. Then, finally, he was standing in front of the shelf. He quickly removed the work pads and sat down to read through them. There were three. The first was dead. A password prevented him from getting into the second, but it flickered and would probably die soon anyway. Mark's excitement almost crashed to a halt. But the third came to life, its glow illuminating the large room so brightly that Mark turned off his flashlight. The owner, evidently a guy named Randall Spilker, had felt no need for a password, and the home station popped up immediately. He spent the next half hour perusing useless information. Mr. Spilker loved games and chat rooms. Mark was almost ready to give up, thinking the guy had merely used the device as a toy, when he finally discovered some hidden work files. Folder after folder revealed nothing. But Mark finally hit the jackpot in a place most people would never have had the patience to find. It was a folder, marked as plainly as the rest, practically lost within a list of 100 others that were empty. It was titled, Kill Order. Chapter 61. There were so many documents that Mark didn't know where to start. Each file had a number assigned to it, and seemed to have been saved in random order. Mark knew he didn't have time to read every single file, so he decided to just start opening and see what he could see. There was file after file of saved correspondence, memorandums, and official announcements. Most numerous were the personal exchanges, all copied into a few files, between Mr. Spilker and his friends, particularly one named Ladina Lichlider. The two of them worked for the Post Flares Coalition, an entity people in the settlements had heard of but knew almost nothing about. From what Mark could gather, the group had brought together as many government agencies as they could from around the world. They'd gathered in Alaska, a location rumored to have been only mildly affected by the sun flares, and they were trying to put the world back together again. It all seemed very noble, and frustrating to those involved, until Mark came across an exchange between Mr. Spilker and Ladina Lichlider, who seemed to be his closest confidant, that sent an icy chill along his arms. He'd been skimming text after text, but he read this one twice. To Randall Spilker, from Ladina Lichlider. Subject, blank.
I'm still sick from the meeting today. I just can't believe it. I can't accept that the PCC actually looked us in the eyes and presented that proposal. Seriously, I was stunned. And then more than half the room agreed with them. They supported it. What the hell is going on? Randall, tell me what the hell is going on. How can we even think about doing something like that? How? I've spent the afternoon trying to make sense of it all. I can't take it. I can't. How did we get here? Come see me tonight, please.
L.L.
What in the world?
Mark wondered.
The PCC. The man named Bruce had mentioned them as part of the people behind the virus attack. Or had that been the PFC, the Post Flares Coalition? Maybe the former was a division of the latter, headquartered somewhere in Alaska. He kept digging. A few minutes later, he found a series of correspondence spliced together into one file that almost made his heart stop. The icy chills from before turned into a cold sweat. Post Flares Coalition Memorandum, date 217.11.28, time 21:46. To all board members, from Chancellor John Michael, R.E. Population Concerns. The report presented to us today, copies of which were sent to all members of the coalition,
certainly left no room for doubt as to the problems that face this already crippled world. I am certain that all of you, like me, went to your shelters in stunned silence. It is my hope that the harsh reality described in this report is now clear enough that we can begin talking about solutions. The problem is simple. The world has too many people and not enough resources. We have scheduled our next meeting for a week from tomorrow. I expect all members to come prepared to present a solution, no matter how extraordinary it seems. You may be familiar with an old business saying, "Think outside the box." I believe it is time we do just that. I look forward to hearing your ideas.
To John Michael, from Katie McVoy. Subject, Potential. John, I looked into the matter we discussed over dinner last night. Amrid barely survived the flares, but they're confident that the underground containment system for the most dangerous viruses, bacteria, and biological weapons didn't fail. It took some wrangling, but I got the information we need. I've looked through it and come up with a recommendation. All the potential solutions are far too unpredictable to be usable. Except one. It's a virus. It attacks the brain and shuts it down painlessly. It acts quickly and decisively. The virus was designed to slowly weaken in infection rate as it spreads from host to host. It will be perfect for our needs, especially considering how severely limited travel has become. It could work, John. And as awful as it seems, I believe it could work efficiently. I'll send over the details. Let me know your thoughts. Katie.
To Katie McVoy, from John Michael. Subject, R.E. Potential. Katie, I need your help preparing my full proposal for the virus release presentation. We need to focus on how a controlled kill is the only way to save lives. Though it will make survival possible for only a select portion of our population, unless we take extreme measures, we face the eventual extinction of the human race. You and I both know how hypothetical this solution is. But we've run the simulations 1,000 times, and I just can't see any alternative. If we don't do this, the world will run out of resources. I firmly believe it is the most ethical decision. The risk of race extinction justifies the elimination of a few. My mind is made up. Now it's a matter of convincing the others on the board. Let's meet at my quarters, 1700. Everything has to be worded perfectly, so prepare yourself for a long night. Until then, John.
Post-Flares Coalition Memorandum, date 219.2.12, time 1932. To all board members, from Chancellor John Michael, subject EO Draft.
Please give me your thoughts on the following draft. The final order will go out tomorrow. Executive Order No. 13 of the Post-Flares Coalition, by recommendation of the Population Control Committee, to be considered top secret of the highest priority on penalty of capital punishment. We, the Coalition, hereby grant the PCC express permission to fully implement their PC Initiative No. 1 as presented in full and attached below. We, the Coalition, take full responsibility for this action and will monitor developments and offer assistance to the fullest extent of our resources. The virus will be released in the locations recommended by the PCC and agreed upon by the Coalition. Armed forces will be stationed to ensure that the process ensues in as orderly a manner as possible. EO No. 13, PCI No. 1, is hereby ratified. Begin immediately.
Mark had to shut down the device for a minute. There was a rushing sound in his ears, and his face burned with heat. His head throbbed. Everything Mark had witnessed in the last week had been sanctioned by the acting government of the flare-inflicted world. It hadn't been terrorists or the work of madmen. It had been approved and executed with the intent of controlling the population, of wiping out entire areas, leaving more resources for those who lived. Mark's entire body shook with anger, intensified by the madness growing inside him. He sat in complete darkness, staring into a black void, but spots swam before his eyes.
spots that formed into shapes. Streaks of fire that made him think of sun flares. People's faces screaming for help. Virus-laced darts shrieking through the air, thunking into necks and arms and shoulders. He began to worry at the things he saw dancing before him, wondered if this revelation had been the final push that sent him over the cliff of insanity. He shook, and sweat covered his skin. He began to cry. Then he screamed as loud as he could. An avalanche of rage like he'd never known before crashed through him. He heard a loud crack. It had come from his lap. He looked down but couldn't see anything. His attempt to power up the work pad proved worthless. He felt around beside him until he found the flashlight, then flicked it on. The work pad's screen had been destroyed. The entire flat panel of the device bent at a weird angle. In his anger, he'd broken the stupid thing. He never would have thought he had the strength. Somehow he formed a coherent thought in the madness that pounded through his skull. He knew what they had to do, and that it was their last and only shot. If the people at the bunker were going to Asheville to face whoever gave them their orders, then Mark and his friends were going too. Getting inside the walled city was the only way Mark could think to find the people who'd issued the kill order. He could only hope they had a way to stop the sickness. He wanted to be made better. Asheville. That was where they had to go. Just like that thug Bruce had said during his speech in the auditorium. Except Mark wanted to beat them to it. He stood up, feeling a little woozy from the images that had been swirling in his vision. The anger pulsed through him as if it, instead of blood, thumped out of his heart and through his veins. But even as he stood, he could feel himself calming. He shined the flashlight once again on the cracked work pad, then tossed the device to the other side of the room. It landed with a clatter. He hoped that someday he'd have a chance to tell this PCC what he thought of their decision. Pain lanced through his skull, and a sudden wave of exhaustion washed over him, a heavy, dragging thing that was like a 2-ton blanket draped over his shoulders. He dropped to his knees, then slumped onto his side, his head resting on the cold floor. There was so much to do. No time for sleeping. But he was so, so tired. For once, he dreamed of something pleasant. Chapter 62. A crackle of thunder makes Trina jump in Mark's arms. It's raining outside the cave, something they haven't seen in at least 3 months since the sun flare struck. Mark shivers, the chill across his skin a fresh relief from the hellish heat that has become his life. They were lucky to find the deep recess in the side of the mountain, and he realized he didn't care if they spent the rest of their lives in the dark, cool place. Alec and the others are farther inside, sleeping. He squeezes Trina's shoulders, leans his head against hers, breathes in her smell, which is salty and sweet. It's the first time since they left the boat on the shores of New Jersey that Mark has felt calm. Almost content.
I love the sound of it,
Trina whispers, as if speaking too loudly might interrupt the drumming patter of the rain outside.
It makes me want to sleep. Snuggle my head right up in your armpit and snore for 3 days.
My armpit? Mark repeats. Good thing we all showered up in the storm this morning. My pits smell like roses. Go ahead and get comfy. She shifts and wiggles, then settles again.
I seriously can't believe we're still alive, Mark. I just can't believe it. Who knows, though? We could be dead in another 6 months. Or tomorrow, I guess.
That's the spirit, he deadpans.
Come on, don't talk like that. How could things possibly get worse than what we've seen? We'll stay here for a while, then go look for the settlements in the South Mountains. Rumors, she said quietly. Huh? Rumors of settlements.
Mark sighs.
They'll be there. You'll see.
He leans his head against the wall and thinks about what she said. That they're lucky to be alive. Truer words have never been spoken. They survived the weeks of solar radiation by hiding inside the Lincoln Building. Survived the relentless heat and drought. The trek across countless miles of wasted land and crime-riddled streets. The acceptance that their families were dead. Traveled by night, hide by day, found food wherever it presented itself, sometimes going without for days. He knows if they hadn't had the military skills of Alec and Lana, they never would have made it this far. Never. But they did. They are still alive and kicking. He smiles, almost in defiance of whatever force of the universe threw such obstacles in their path. He starts to think that maybe, in a few years, all could be well again. Lightning flashes somewhere off in the distance. Thunder rumbling a few seconds later. It seems louder, closer than before. And the rain has picked up, pounding the ground outside the entrance to the cave. For the millionth time, he thinks how lucky they are that they stumbled across the hidden haven. Trina shifts to look up at him. Alex said that once the storm started, they might get really bad. That the weather in the world is going to be screwed up big time.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll take rain and wind and lightning any day over what it's been like. We'll just stay in this cave. How about that?
Can't stay here forever.
Okay, then. A week. A month. Just stop thinking.
Sheesh.
She tilts her face up and kisses him on the cheek.
What would I do without you? I'd die of stress and depression before nature killed me.
Probably true.
He smiles and hopes she'll just enjoy the peace for a while. After shifting back down into a comfortable position, she hugs him a little tighter.
Seriously, though, I'm really glad I have you. You mean the world to me.
Same to you, he replies.
And then he grows quiet, not daring to let his mouth take over, say something cheesy and ruin the moment. He closes his eyes. Light flashes, followed quickly by the boom of thunder. The storm is definitely getting closer. Mark woke up, and for a few seconds he remembered the feeling of staring at Trina when things had begun to turn a corner and hope, the slightest trace, was in her eyes. Whether she would admit it or not on that day. For the first time in months, he wished he could sink back into his dreams. The longing in his heart was almost painful. But then reality rolled in, along with the darkness of the cargo room. The storms had been bad, all right, he thought. Really bad. But they'd survived that too, eventually finding their way to the settlements. Where they might have lived in peace if it weren't for a committee called the PCC. Groaning, rubbing his eyes, he let out a long yawn, then stood up, and fully remembered the decisions he'd made before succumbing to sleep. Asheville. He bent over, picked up the flashlight, and flicked it on. Then he turned around to head for the door and was startled to see Alec standing there, filling up the frame as if he'd grown several inches taller. Because the faint light of the ship was behind him, his face was hidden in shadow, but there was something sinister about it, something disquieting about how he'd been there for who knew how long without announcing himself, and still wasn't saying anything.
Alec? Mark asked.
You okay there, big guy? The man stumbled forward, almost fell down. But he righted himself and stood up straight and tall again. Mark hadn't wanted to shine the light in his friend's face, but he felt like he had no choice. He raised the flashlight and pointed it directly at Alec.
He was flushed and sweating, his eyes wide and darting back and forth as if he expected a monster to leap from the shadows at any moment.
"Hey, what's wrong?" Mark asked.
Alec took another laboring step forward.
"I'm sick, Mark. I'm really, really sick. I need to die. I need to die. And I don't want to die for nothing."
Chapter 63. Mark couldn't remember ever having been at such a loss for words. Alec slouched to the ground, falling to one knee.
"I'm serious, boy. I've been feeling funny. My mind playing tricks. Seeing things, feeling things. I'm feeling a little bit better right now, but I don't want to be like those people. I need to die. And I don't want to wait till morning."
"What? Why?"
Mark stammered for the right thing to say. It had been inevitable that this would happen, but it still shocked him to the core.
"What do you want me to do?"
The man shot him a glare.
"I've thought it..."
He spasmed, suddenly contorting into an unnatural shape, his head thrown back, his face twisted in pain. A strangled, choked cry escaped his throat.
"Alec!"
Mark shouted, running up to him. He had to duck when the man suddenly swung a fist. Alec fell to the floor.
"What's wrong?"
The old man's body relaxed, and he got on his hands and knees, laboring heavily to breathe.
I don't know. Weird things are knocking around my noggin."
Mark ran his hands through his hair, looking around in anguish, as if some magical answer to all their problems might appear in a dark corner of the cargo room. When he turned back to Alec, the man had stood, holding his hands up as if surrendering.
"Listen to me,"
Alec said.
"I've got ideas. Things are bleak, no doubt, but..."
He pointed in the direction of the barracks where Trina and Dee Dee were sleeping.
"We have a precious little girl in there who can be saved. If nothing else, we need to get her to Asheville. Drop her off. Then..."
He shrugged, a pathetic gesture that said all too much. It was over for the rest of them.
"A treatment, a cure," Mark said, hearing the defiance in his voice. "That Bruce guy thought there might be one. We need to go there for that, too, and..."
"Oh, horse crap,"
Alec barked, cutting him off.
"Just listen to me before I can't talk straight anymore. I'm the only one who can fly this thing. I want you to come to the cockpit and watch me. Learn as much as that head of yours can handle, just in case. You're right. We're taking that girl to Asheville if it's the last thing I do."
A suffocating, dark feeling enveloped Mark. He'd be crazy or dead soon. But Alec's idea was much like his, and the only thing he could think to do was take action.
"Then let's go,"
he said, fighting back the sudden sting of tears.
"Let's not waste one more second."
Alec twitched, and his arms jerked outward, but then he clenched his fists and brought them back down. His face strained as if he'd fought off another attack with willpower alone. Clarity filled his eyes, and he looked at Mark for a long moment. It was as if all of the past year, the memories, the horrors, even the laughs, passed quickly between them, and Mark wondered if either of them would ever be so grounded again. Madness waited in the wings. The soldier gave a quick nod, and the two of them headed for the door. They reached the cockpit without seeing any sign of Trina or Dee Dee. Mark had hoped they'd be awake. Maybe by some miracle, Trina would be better, laughing, remembering. It was a foolish thought. As Alec got to work on the controls, Mark looked outside. A trace of dawn had brightened the eastern sky,
the darkness fading into light purple over the houses and trees in the distance. Most of the stars had winked out. The sun would make its grand entrance within the hour. He had a heavy feeling that day would end with everything changed forever.
"I'm okay for a bit,"
Alex said, standing back to scan the instruments and screens of the control panel.
"Why don't you go check on the girls? We'll be off the ground in a jiffy. We'll do some flyovers and see what we see."
Mark nodded and patted him on the back. A ridiculous gesture, but all he could think of to do. He was worried about his friend. He turned on his flashlight and left the cockpit, entering the short passage that led to the barracks room where he'd left Trina, resting peacefully in a bunk with Dee Dee. Mark was almost to the door of the barracks when he heard a strange scratching noise above him, like rats scurrying across the panels of the ceiling. Then there was the distinct sound of a man giggling, only feet over his head. A shudder of horror passed through him. He ran a few steps down the hall and spun around, pressing his back against the wall. He looked up at the ceiling, shining the flashlight over the panels, but saw nothing out of the ordinary. He held his breath and listened. Something was up there, moving back and forth, almost rhythmically.
"Hey!"
Mark shouted.
"Who?"
His question died when he realized he hadn't checked on Trina yet. If someone or something had snuck its way onto the berg, he ran to the barracks door and flung it open, frantically shining his light on the bunk where he'd last seen Trina sleeping. For one split second, his heart stalled. The bunk was empty. It was just rumpled sheets and a blanket. Then out of the corner of his eye, he saw Trina on the floor, Dee Dee sitting right next to her. They were holding hands, and both of them had sheer terror on their faces.
"What?" Mark asked. "What happened?"
Dee Dee pointed a shaking finger toward the ceiling.
"The boogeyman's up there."
She paused, visibly shaking, a sight that tore at Mark's heart.
"And he brought his friends."
Chapter 64. She'd barely said the last word when the berg burst into life and launched off the ground. The floor tilted, and Mark stumbled and fell onto the cot, then pushed himself to his feet.
"Just stay there," he said. "I'll be right back."
He wasn't going to hesitate this time. He ran from the barracks into the hallway, piercing the darkness with his flashlight as he headed straight for the cockpit. He thought he heard another giggle coming from the ceiling in the same spot as before, and horrible thoughts popped into his mind. Bloodthirsty men and women, infected and insane, leaping through the panels once he disappeared, attacking the girls he'd left behind. But he had no choice, and he'd be quick. Besides, if there were people up there, they'd waited this long without doing anything. Chances were he had some time. He bolted into the cockpit where Alec was manning the controls. He was sweaty and flushed, and concentrating hard on what he was doing.
"Where's the transvice?" Mark shouted.
Alec spun around, fear crossing his face, but Mark didn't waste time with explanations. The man's weapon was propped up against the wall next to him. Mark ran to it, grabbed it, and threw the strap around his shoulder, then made sure it was powered up and started back toward the barracks, toward Trina and Dee Dee.
"Turn some lights on out here,"
he yelled back to Alec as he slipped out of the cockpit. He'd dropped the flashlight at some point, and the world was pitch dark. Conserving power and fuel no longer meant a thing. He'd only gone a few feet down the corridor before the dim lights flashed on and illuminated his path, though shadows clung to the walls. Sweat dripped into his eyes as he pounded down the corridor. It felt as if the heat inside the berg had skyrocketed to 1,000 degrees. The sweltering air combined with his shot nerves, the razor's edge of madness that cut into his psyche, put him on the brink of losing it. He just had to hold on for a little while longer. With every bit of effort he could muster, he focused only on the next seconds of his life. He crossed under the place he'd heard the giggling. Even as he did, a cackle came from above. It was low and throaty, as ominous a thing as he could imagine. but the panel remained intact. He tore through the door of the barracks and saw with relief that Trina and Dee Dee were still huddled together on the floor. He was just moving toward them when three sections of the ceiling suddenly collapsed, breaking apart in a crunch of plaster and metal. Several bodies fell among the pieces, crashing on top of the two girls. Dee Dee screamed. Mark raised his weapon and rushed forward, not daring to shoot, but ready to fight. Three people were scrambling to their feet, shoving Dee Dee and Trina as if they were simply objects in their way. A man and two women. They were laughing hysterically, leaping from foot to foot, and throwing their arms around like wild apes. Mark reached the man and swung the butt of his transvice into the side of his head. The man cried out and crumpled to the floor. Mark used his momentum to turn his body and kick one of the women away from his friends. She shrieked and toppled onto the nearest cot, and he aimed the transvice, pulling the trigger. A bolt of white heat hit her, and she grayed, then dissipated into the air. She'd barely disappeared when the other woman tackled him from the side. They both landed on the floor, and for what felt like the 100th time in the past week, the air was knocked from his lungs. He twisted onto his back, pulling her on top of him as she struggled to rip the transvice out of his hands. He saw Trina and Dee Dee standing up, pressed against the wall, watching helplessly. Mark knew the old Trina would have joined in and helped somehow. She would have attacked the woman and probably beaten her senseless. But this new Trina, this sick Trina, just stood there like a frightened little girl, clutching Dee Dee in her arms. Mark grunted and kept fighting the woman. He heard a groan, looked over to see the man he'd knocked out crawling to his hands and knees. The guy's eyes were glued on Mark, full of hatred and madness. He bared his teeth and growled. The man came at him on all fours, as if he had transformed into some kind of rabid animal. He pushed off the ground and leaped into the struggle between Mark and the woman like a lion attacking its prey. He crashed into the woman, and the two were suddenly locked in an embrace. They fell off Mark, rolling across the floor as if playing some kind of game. Mark was still gasping for breath, but he turned onto his side, then his stomach, got his knees under him, his elbows, pushed up. He leaned against a cot and finally was able to stand. He calmly aimed the transvice at the man, then the woman, taking two clean shots. The noise shook the air like thunder, and the people were no more. Mark heard his own breathing, heavy and strained. He glanced wearily over at Trina and Dee Dee, still huddled against the wall. It was close as to which of them looked more terrified.
"Sorry you had to see that," Mark mumbled, unable to find anything else to say. "Come on, let's get to the cockpit. We're taking..."
He'd almost said, "taking Dee Dee," but he'd caught himself. He didn't know how Trina might respond.
"We're going somewhere safe," he finished.
A burst of deep laughing seemed to come from everywhere at once, the same horrible sound as before. It was followed by a hitched series of coughs that eased back into the haunted fit of giggling. To Mark, nothing sounded more as though it belonged inside a mental hospital, and goosebumps broke out across his skin despite the heat. Trina was staring at the floor, her gaze so empty that Mark felt another pang of loss. He stepped closer to the girls and reached out a hand. The man hidden in the rafters continued to chuckle.
"We can do this," he said. "All you have to do is take my hand and walk with me. It won't be long before we're all safe."
He didn't mean to falter on the last word. Dee Dee raised her scarred arm and squeezed his middle finger, held on to it. This seemed to trigger some reaction in Trina, and she shifted away from the wall and put her weight fully on her feet. Her eyes didn't stray from that spot on the floor, and she was still clutching Dee Dee's shoulders with both hands, but it looked like she'd follow.
"Good," Mark whispered. "We're going to ignore that poor guy up there and walk nice and calm to the cockpit. Let's go."
He turned and started moving before anything changed in Trina's countenance. Tugging on Dee Dee's hand, he walked quickly toward the door of the barracks. A glance behind him showed Trina still attached to the girl, as if they'd been glued together. There was the pitter-patter of footsteps above them, which almost made him stop, but he steeled his nerves and kept going. They went through the door and into the hallway. They had nowhere else to go. It was even darker out there. The emergency lights just a pale glowing line running along the upper edges of the walls. After quick looks left and right, Mark headed off in the direction of the cockpit. He'd barely taken a step when there was a burst of sound and movement, and then a thud directly above him. A fit of laughter, the sudden appearance of a man's face and arms hanging upside down right in front of him. A cry escaped Mark's lips before he could help it, and shock froze him solid. In his stupor, he was unable to react in time. The man reached out and tore the transvise out of his hands, breaking the strap in the process. Mark grabbed for it, but the stranger had been as quick as a striking snake. Then he disappeared back into the rafters above, laughing all the while. His thumping footsteps and cackles faded as he ran to another part of the ship. Chapter 65. Mark didn't think he could get up to the ceiling and climb after the man, and he could be hiding anywhere, with instant and certain death pointed right at whoever came his way.
"I can't believe it," he whispered.
How could he have let the guy rip the thing out of his hands like that? It had happened twice in less than a day, and now there was a crazy person in the ship somewhere with the most dangerous handheld weapon ever invented. "Come on," he said tightly, then pulled Dee Dee and Trina along behind him as he started running down the hall. He looked up every few seconds, wondering if the man would suddenly appear, hanging down from the ceiling, ready to shoot. He also strained to listen for any sound other than the pounding of their own footsteps. When they reached the cockpit, the first thing Mark noticed was Alec slumped over the controls, his head buried in his arms.
"Alec!"
Mark let go of Dee Dee's hand and rushed toward the man, but Alec shot straight up before Mark reached him, startling him so much he almost skidded across the floor.
"Whoa, you okay?"
He didn't look it. His eyes were puffy and bloodshot, his skin pale and sweaty.
I'm hanging in there."
"You're the only one who knows how to fly this thing." Mark felt terrible for saying it, selfish. But he looked out the windows and saw the foothills above Asheville slowly moving past below them.
"I mean, I don't—"
"Save your breath, kid. I know the stakes. I'm trying to find where the PFC is headquartered in the city. I just needed a rest."
Mark broke the news. "There's a crazy dude on the ship. He stole the transvise." Alec didn't say anything, merely screwed up his face, which had become alarmingly flushed. He looked as if he might literally burst at any second.
"Calm down," Mark said slowly. "I'll get it back. You just find the place."
"I will,"
the older man said through clenched teeth.
"I need to show you some of the controls soon."
"I'm scared,"
Dee Dee said, standing there with her hand in Trina's. Mark saw that her eyes were focused on the windows. The poor thing had probably never been in a burg before. He expected Trina to comfort the girl, but she did nothing, just stood staring blankly at the floor again.
"Look, it's going to be okay,"
Mark said, squatting down to Dee Dee's height. He'd barely done it when the ship bounced in a pocket of air. Dee Dee screamed again, and this time she tore her hand free from Trina and ran, bolting out of the cockpit before anyone could grab her.
"Hey!"
Mark shouted, already on the move. A flash of her being vaporized almost stilled his heart. He sprinted after the girl, just catching sight of her rounding the bend of the hallway outside the cockpit, in the direction of the cargo room.
"Come back!"
But she was gone. Mark sped after her, but he'd only gone a few frantic steps when he caught sight of her again, standing completely still, staring at something in front of her. Mark didn't stop until he reached Dee Dee's side and saw what had her attention.
The infected man who'd stolen the transvice was just outside the door to the cargo room, the weapon clutched in his hands. And he had it aimed at Dee Dee.
Please, Mark whispered over the thumping of his icy heart. Please don't.
He held out a hand toward the man, put the other on Dee Dee's shoulder.
I'm begging you. She's only...
I know who she is,
the stranger shouted, a line of spit hitting his chin. His arms trembled and his knees shook. Matted dark hair hung down from his filthy head, framing a pale, scratched face that shone with sweat. He leaned up against the frame of the door as if he needed it to stand.
Sweet little girl! That's probably what you think she is.
What are you talking about?
Mark wondered how he was supposed to talk to someone this far past reason. The man was obviously beyond any hope. His eyes said it all.
Brought the demons, she did.
He stabbed the transvice in the air to emphasize his point.
I was in the village with her. They came down on us like the flares themselves. Lightning and rain of poison. Left us to die, or worse. And look at her now. Even though she was hit, all fine and cute, laughing at us all for what she'd done.
She had nothing to do with that, Mark said.
He could feel Dee Dee quaking under his hand.
Not a thing. How could she? She's 5 years old at the most.
Anger seethed inside him, anger that he couldn't hide.
Nothing to do with it? That's why she got shot and showed no sign of it? She's some kind of savior to those demons, and I mean to send her back to them.
The man lurched forward. He took two long steps, almost lost his balance, but somehow stayed on his feet. The transvice was shaking in his hands, but still pointing at Dee Dee. Mark's anger dissolved and was replaced by a huge lump of fear that lodged in his throat. Tears stung his eyes. He felt so helpless.
Please, I don't know what to say to you, but I swear she's innocent. We went to the bunker where the Bergs came from. We found out who's behind the disease. They aren't demons. They were just people. We think she's immune. That's why she didn't get sick.
You shut up,
the man answered, ambling forward another couple of steps. He lifted the transvice and aimed it at Mark's face.
You've got the look about you. Pathetic. Stupid. Weak in the knees. Demons wouldn't even bother with someone like you. An utter waste of flesh.
He smiled, pulling his lips farther back than seemed possible. Half of his teeth were missing. Something shifted deep down inside Mark. He knew what it was, even if he didn't dare admit it. That bubble of insanity that was ready to burst for good. A rush of anger and adrenaline flooded him. Rage formed in his chest and tore through his throat, released in a scream so loud he didn't know he had the strength to create it. He rushed forward, leaping into action before the man could begin to process what was happening. Mark saw the man's finger move, close on the trigger, but somehow, as if his burgeoning madness had momentarily heightened all of his senses one last time, Mark somehow outpaced him. He dove and swept his hand upward, knocking the weapon away as it shot a bolt of white heat. He heard the shot thump against the wall behind them. His shoulder slammed into the man next, throwing him to the floor. Mark crashed on top of him, but was already righting himself, getting his feet underneath him. He grabbed the man's shirt and yanked him upward, tore the transvice from his grasp and threw it to the ground. That was too easy a death for this psycho. Mark started dragging him down the hallway, aware on some level that he himself had crossed into territory from which he wasn't sure he'd come back. Chapter 66. The man screamed and clawed at Mark's face, kicked blindly and tried to stand and run. But Mark didn't let any of it affect him. A universe of fury seemed to spin inside Mark, an impossible feeling that he knew couldn't last, couldn't be contained. his sanity hung by a thread. He dragged the man on, along the curve of the hallway, through the cockpit door, toward the broken window. Alec didn't even seem to notice, was sitting there with his hands clenched in his lap, staring blankly at the controls. Mark didn't say anything, thought something might explode out of him if he dared open his mouth. He stopped next to the window, bent over and grabbed the man around the torso, then lifted him, holding him sideways. He twisted to pull the guy back, then flung him toward the window. His head cracked against the wall, and the man fell to the ground. Mark picked him up, pulled back, and tried again. Same result, the man's head thumping loudly. Mark picked the man back up and once again threw him toward the broken window. This time the guy went through, head, then shoulders, then waist, before he got stuck. Mark didn't let go, kept pushing and shoving, throwing all his strength into ending this man's life. The ship lurched just as Mark shoved the man's hips through the open space. His muscles tensed as he pushed. The entire world tilted, his head spinning with a rush of blood through his system. Gravity seemed to disappear as well, and he was falling through the window along with the stranger, where blue sky and wispy clouds had filled Mark's vision before. Now he saw the ground straight in front of him. He was about to plummet to his death. Mark kicked out and latched his legs on the lip of the window frame before he could fall all the way out. The rest of his body hung from the berg, and the man hadn't let go of him. He clutched Mark's upper arms, gripping his shirt to keep himself from plunging to the earth below. Mark tried to push the guy away, but he was desperate and wild, climbing Mark's body like a rope, high enough that his legs now wrapped around Mark's head. Wind tore at both of them. How could this possibly be happening again? Mark asked himself. Falling out of the berg's window twice. A jolt ran through the ship, and suddenly it righted itself again. Mark and the man swung back toward the body of the berg and slammed into the side, just below the window from which they dangled. Mark's legs screamed with pain from supporting two people. He flailed with his arms, trying to find something to hold on to. The outside of the berg was littered with various boxy protrusions and handles for maintenance workers. He ran his hands along them but couldn't still himself long enough to get a grip. Mark's fingers finally found a long bar, and he gripped it tightly. Just in time, because his legs had no strength left. His feet slipped from the window, and the two bodies flipped over and slammed into the berg's side once more. Mark felt the jolt through his entire body but held on, slipping his forearm into the gap between the handle and the ship so that his elbow took the weight. His stomach and face pressed against the warm metal of the berg, the crazed man still clambering for some kind of position on his back. The man was screaming right in his ear. Mark's mind jumped between clarity and foggy anger. What was Alec doing? What was happening inside? The ship had righted itself, continued to fly forward, though at a slower speed, and no one was reaching out of the window to offer any help. Mark looked down and immediately regretted it, a wave of terror crashing over him when he saw how far away the ground was. He had to get rid of this man, or he'd never be able to climb back inside. The wind gusted, whipping the man's hair into Mark's face and rippling through their clothes. The sounds were all too much, the wind, the screams, the roar of the thrusters. The closest spout of blue flame was just below them, maybe 10 feet away, burning like the breath of a dragon. Mark shook his shoulders, kicked off the side of the berg with his feet, and let himself slam back into it. Still the man held on. He'd scraped Mark's neck and arms and cheeks, leaving painful gashes everywhere. Mark ached, every part of him. A quick examination of the berg's body showed several places he could wedge his feet. Going up seemed impossible with the extra weight of the crazy guy on his back. He decided to go down, a terrifying idea having formed in his head. The gamut of options had run out. His strength was just about sapped. He reached way down, grabbed a short bar, then let his body fall, planting his foot on a boxy metal outcrop he'd spotted. The man shrieked and almost let go of Mark's arms, slipping until he caught hold again, wrapping both of his arms around Mark's neck and squeezing just enough to make him gag. Choking out a cough, Mark sought more places for his hands and feet, dropped another yard or so, then another. The man had ceased his juddering movements. He'd even grown silent. Mark had never known such hatred for anyone, and in some faint part of his psyche, he knew it wasn't quite rational. But he loathed the man and wanted him dead. It was the only goal in his mind. He kept descending. Wind tore at them, trying to rip them away. The thruster was so close now, just below and to his left, its roar the loudest thing Mark had ever heard. He stepped down again, and suddenly his feet were dangling in open air. There was nowhere left to put them. Another bar ran along the length of the berg's lower edge, with just enough space for Mark to slip his arm through it. Mark slid his right arm in and crooked his elbow, letting every pound of his and the man's combined weight rest on the joint once again. The strain was terrible. It felt like his arm would rip in two at any second. But he only needed a few moments. Only a few. He twisted his body, craning his neck to look at the man who clung to his back. He hugged Mark with one arm above his shoulder and one wrapped around his chest. Somehow, Mark got his free hand up, slipping it between their two bodies and up to his foe's neck. He slammed it into the man's windpipe and began to squeeze. The guy began to choke, his grayish-purple tongue sticking out between his chapped lips. Mark's right elbow shuddered in pain, trembling as if the tendons and bone and tissue were coming apart. He tightened his fingers around the man's throat. The guy coughed and spat, his eyes bulging. His grip on Mark began to loosen, and as soon as it did, Mark acted. With a shout of rage, he pushed the man's body outward, snapping his arm straight and shoving him directly into the path of the thruster's blue flames, watching as the man's head and shoulders were consumed by the fire, disintegrating before he could even scream. What remained of his body plummeted toward the city below, swept out of Mark's vision as the berg sped forward. Madness crept through Mark's muscles. Lights danced before his eyes. Anger howled within him. He knew that his life was almost forfeit. But there was one last thing he had to do. He started climbing back up the outer face of the monstrous berg. Chapter 67. No one helped him through the window. Every inch of his body ached, and his muscles were rubber, but somehow he managed to make it on his own, falling to the floor of the cockpit in a heap. Alec sat hunched over the controls, his face slack and his eyes empty. Trina sat in the corner, Dee Dee huddled in her lap. Both of them looked at him, but their expressions were unreadable.
"Flat trans," Mark blurted out.
Sparkles and flashes of light continued to cross his field of vision, and he could barely contain the unstable emotions that churned within him.
"Bruce said the PFC had a flat trans in Asheville. We have to find it."
Alec's head snapped up, and he glared at Mark. But then something softened in his gaze.
"I think I know where to find it."
As lifeless a thing as had ever come out of his mouth. Mark felt the berg descending. He leaned his head against the wall and closed his eyes. For a moment, wanting nothing but to fall asleep and never wake up again, or to do the opposite and kneel, bashing his head against the floor until it was over. But there was still that small sliver of clarity in his mind. He held on to it like a man clinging to a root on the side of a sheer cliff. Eyes open again. With a grunt, he forced himself to his feet, leaning against the window. The small city of Asheville lay spread out before them. Walls had been constructed out of wood, scrap metal, cars, anything big and strong enough to protect what was inside, a mostly burned-out urban center. He saw a mass of people at a breach in one wall, climbing over it, surging into the town. A man was waving them on with a red flag tied to a stick.
It was Bruce, the man who'd given the speech back at the bunker. They'd come for the flat trans too, just like he'd promised his co-workers. And by the looks of it, countless others who'd been infected had joined him. There were hundreds scaling the broken wall. The Berg flew past them, over street after empty street, and then there was a small building with double doors hanging wide open. A hand-painted sign said, PFC personnel only. A few people were lined up to go inside. They seemed calm and collected. Mark hated them for it, and had a fleeting moment where he itched to find the transvice to start firing away.
That's it, Alec muttered.
And Mark knew what he meant. If there really was a flat trans device, it would be there. The few people entering the building had to be the last of the PFC workers, fleeing the East once and for all, leaving it to be claimed by madness and death. They looked up at the Berg with something like terror in their eyes, then, as one, they disappeared inside. Mark fumbled around in a cabinet until he found some old-school paper and a pencil, stored there for power loss emergencies. With a messy hand, he scrawled the message he'd been thinking about, then turned toward Alec.
Land,
he breathed. His lungs felt full of fire instead of air.
Hurry!
He folded the note and shoved it in his back pocket. Alec's every movement was strained, his muscles tense, veins like ropes under his skin. He was flushed and sweaty, trembling. But a few moments later, the Berg landed with a surprisingly soft thump just outside the entrance to the PFC building.
Open the hatch.
Mark was already on the move, the world a haze around him. He grabbed Dee Dee out of Trina's lap far more roughly than he meant to, ignoring the little girl's cries of protest. Holding her in his arms, he moved toward the exit, Trina on his tail. She hadn't said a word or lifted a finger to stop him. At the cockpit's door, Mark paused.
You know what to do when I'm done, he said to Alec.
Words a struggle now.
If it's there or not, you know what to do.
Without waiting for a response, he marched into the hallway. Dee Dee calmed as he headed for the cargo room and the exit beyond that. Her arms tightened around his neck, and she buried her face into his shoulder. As if understanding had dawned, even for her, that the end was here. Spots swam before Mark's eyes, flashing lights. His heart wouldn't stop racing, and it felt as if the organ pumped acid through his veins. Trina, silent, kept up with him. Into the cargo room, down the ramp of the hatch door, into the brightness of day. They'd barely stepped off of it when squeals pierced the air and the slab of metal began to close. Alec lifted the Berg off the ground, blue thrusters roaring. Mark was barely holding on to his mind, but he felt a sudden, unbearable sadness. He'd never see the old bear again. The sun sweltered in the sky. There was a rising rumble of shouts and whistles and marching. Groups of the infected were approaching from all directions. Far off, through the display of lights flashing before his eyes, Mark thought he could see Bruce and his red flag leading his own charge. If these people got to the flat trans before someone shut it down or destroyed it.
Come on,
he grunted to Trina. The wind from the ascending berg blew across them as he ran over to the entrance of the building, its doors still open. Dee Dee clung to him, and Trina was right by his side. They went through the entrance into a wide room with no furniture. Only a strange object right in the center. Two metallic rods, standing tall, with a shimmering wall of gray stretched in between them. It appeared to be moving and sparkling, yet still and serene at the same time. It hurt Mark's eyes to stare at it. A man and a woman were standing next to it, looking back at Mark and his friends with fear in their eyes. They were already moving toward the grayness.
Wait!
Mark yelled. They didn't respond, didn't stop. The two strangers leaped into the abyss, and vanished from sight. On instinct, Mark sprinted to the other side of the gray wall, yet there was nothing there. A flat trans. For the first time in his life, he'd actually seen someone travel through a flat trans. The noise of the approaching crowds outside seemed to tick up a notch, and Mark knew he was out of time. In so many ways. He walked back over to the proper side of the flat trans and kneeled right before it, gently placing Dee Dee on her feet. It took every last ounce of his effort to remain calm and keep his swirling emotions and anger and madness at bay. Trina knelt as well, though she said nothing.
"Listen to me," Mark said to the girl.
He stopped, closed his eyes for a second, fought off the darkness that tried to consume him.
"Only a little longer," he told himself. "I need you to be really brave for me now, okay? There are people on the other side of this magic wall that are going to help you. And you're going to help them. You're going to help them do something really important. There's something special about you."
He didn't know what he expected. For Dee Dee to protest, to cry, to run away. But instead, she looked him in the eye and nodded. Mark's head wasn't clear enough to understand how she could be so brave. She was special. He'd almost forgotten about the note he'd scribbled earlier. He pulled it out of his back pocket, read it one more time, his hand shaking. "She's immune to the flare. Use her. Do it before the crazy people find you." He gently reached out for Dee Dee's hand and scrunched the paper up into her palm, closed her fingers around it, squeezed her hand with both of his. The shouts and calls from outside grew to a crescendo. Mark spotted Bruce charging the door, a mass of people behind him. Mark's entire body washed with sadness. He nodded at the flat trans. Dee Dee nodded back. Then, she and Trina were hugging, fiercely. Both of them shed tears. Mark was on his feet. He heard the unmistakable sound of the Berg's thrusters returning. Noticed a wind picking up outside. The time had come.
"Go now,"
he said, fighting the emotions that tore through him. Dee Dee pulled away from Trina and turned, ran into the gray wall of the flat trans. It swallowed her whole, and she was gone. The roar of the Berg filled the air. The building trembled. Bruce arrived at the door, screaming something unintelligible. And then, Trina was rushing to Mark, throwing her arms around his neck, kissing him. A thousand thoughts flipped through his mind, and he saw her in all of them, wrestling in the front yard of her house before they were old enough to know anything, saying hi in the school hallway, riding the subtrans, feeling her hand in the darkness after the flares struck. The terror of the tunnels, the rushing waters, the Lincoln Building, waiting out the radiation, stealing the boat, the countless treks across ruined, sweltering land. She'd been there with him through it all, with Alec, Lana, Darnell, and the others. And here at the end of the fight, Trina was in his arms. Monstrous noise and quaking took over the world, but he still heard what she whispered into his ear before the Berg came crashing into the building.
"Mark."
Epilogue. 2 years later. A single light bulb hung from the apartment's drab ceiling, buzzing every 10 seconds or so. Somehow it seemed to represent what the world had become. Lonely, noisy, dying, barely holding on. The woman sat in her chair, trying desperately not to cry. She'd known the knock was coming far before it happened, and she wanted to be strong for her son. Make the boy think that the new life that awaited him was a good thing, a hopeful thing. She had to be strong. When her son, her only child, was gone, then she'd let it out. Then she'd cry a river's worth until the madness made her forget. The boy sat next to her, quiet, unmoving. Only a child, and yet it seemed he understood that his life would never be the same. He had a small bag packed, though the woman assumed its contents would be discarded before her son reached his final destination. And so they waited. Their visitors tapped the door 3 times. There was no anger behind it, or force. Just tap, tap, tap. Like the gentle pecking of a bird. "Come in," she said, so loud it startled her. Nerves. She was on the edge. The door opened. 2 men and 1 woman stepped inside the small apartment, dressed in black suits, protective masks covering their mouths and noses. The lady seemed in charge. "I can see you're ready," she said, her voice muffled, as she walked forward and stood before the woman and her son. "We appreciate your willingness to make such a sacrifice. I don't need to tell you how much this means to future generations. We're on the cusp of a very great thing. We will find the cure, ma'am. I give you my word." The woman could only nod. If she tried to speak, it would all come out. Her pain, her fear, her anger, her tears. And then her efforts to be strong for the boy would have been for naught. So she kept it in, a dam against a raging river. The lady was all business. "Come," she said, extending a hand. The boy looked up at his mother. He had no reason to hold back the tears, and he didn't. They flowed down his face freely. He jumped to his feet and hugged her, shattering her heart 1,000,000 times over. She squeezed him back.
"You're going to do great things for this world," she whispered, somehow keeping herself under control. "You're going to make me so proud. I love you, sweet boy. I love you so much, and don't you ever forget it."
His only response was to sob into her shoulder. And that said everything. Finally, it had to end.
"I'm very sorry," the lady in the dark suit and mask said. "But we have a tight schedule. Truly, I'm sorry."
"Go on now," the mother said to her son. "Go on, and be brave."
He pulled back, his face wet, his eyes red. A strength seemed to come over him, and he nodded, helping her believe he'd be okay in the end. He was strong, this one. The boy turned away, never to look at her again. He walked to the door and went through it with no hesitation. No glance back, no complaints.
"Thank you again," the visiting lady said.
She followed the boy out. One of the men looked up at the dangling, buzzing light bulb, then turned to his partner.
"You know who invented those things, right? Maybe we should call this one Thomas."
And then they left. When the door closed, the woman curled up into a ball, and finally, let her tears come. This is Mark Deakins. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of The Kill Order by James Dashner. This program was produced by Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2012 by James Dashner. Production copyright 2012, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.